Hi, I'm Jack. I'm Mark, alcoholic. Jack had a family emergency, and we'll see what the higher power put in his place. See how this goes. I'm a grateful member of Al-Anon since May 9th of 1982. My home group, when I'm in Houston, is the Holy Name Retreat Wednesday morning Al-Anon group. One meeting is a step meeting at 10, and 11 is a discussion meeting. So I go to both of those. When I started going there, I was the only male in the room, and quickly they forgot about me. So, through the years, and my sponsor, the only bad part about being in the program a long time is the people that were giants in the program for me have passed on. But they're in my heart, and you will get quite a bit of what they gave me. And so they're still alive in a sense. So, one of the things about Al-Anons that they really have to work on is fun. These are some serious people. I said, this is fun has come to die here. So, with that in mind, a non-recovering Al-Anon joke. Three people getting ready to have a guillotine. Put one of them in, the blade falls down and stops. Miracle. Lets them go, or lets her go. Next person, head in there, guillotine goes down, stops right before they behead them. Ah, another miracle. Untreated Al-Anon gets in there, looking around and says, you know what, if you oiled that, it would work better. Yep. Now, a recovering Al-Anon joke is, how many Al-Anons does it take to screw in a light bulb? None. It screws itself. That's kind of letting the alcoholic do what they're going to do. When I came in also, they talked about my alcoholic. Well, my alcoholic was my wife at the time. And you know what? She just texted me, my ex-wife. Jackie's been sober, I think, 38, 39 years. Still real good friends. And she said, well, tell them the story. I said, no, we're not going to tell them that story. That's private party information. That's too much information. Only she would know that one. So I'm also what they call a double winner. And so that means I am also in AA. And my sobriety day is February 16th of 1981. So I was married at the time to an active alcoholic, and the stuff that really bothered me, though, was the diet pills. 1:30, 2 o'clock in the morning, vacuuming. Hey, I'm trying to sleep here. If you weren't so lazy, And so, that was Mother's Day of 1982. She was at her mom's, out of her mind on these pills. Her mother took the pills too. She was getting it from her mom. And honestly, if I hadn't gone to Al-Anon, I wouldn't be sober. I know it. Because I was losing my mind. I was so miserable. And in the class of 81, I was at the bottom. everybody else was going along okay. They were feeling happy, joyous, and free. Some of them had what we call pink clouds. I had a constant one-year black cloud. It was just, I only had any peace of mind when I was in a meeting. And so I was desperate to stop this pain. And I figured, I think I've got another couple of months, and then I just can't take it. I got to drink. There's just no way. AA didn't know what to do with me. They just said, keep going to meetings, and that's fine. But there was a solution. And I found it May 9th, 1982. And praise God. So I have on my phone, I'm not taking pictures, but I took pictures so that I don't bring up a bunch of sheets of paper. So there's something that, when I came in, really helped me. Anybody familiar with the do's and don'ts? Well, I was doing the don'ts and not doing the do's. Story of my life. Tapes are in backwards. So, the do's. We'll start with the do's. Do forgive. That right over my head. Do be honest with myself. Over my head. Do be humble. After each one of these, I'd call it, yeah, but. I was on my yeah, buts. Yeah, but if she was better, I'd be better. Do take it easy. How can you take it easy when you got this active alcoholism craziness? Here's a good one. Tension's harmful. What the heck? It was nothing but tense, 24/7. Play. Find recreation and hobbies. Now, they changed it a little bit. It used to be do find new interests and activities. That's the way it used to sound. Keep on trying when you fail. That was so important because I failed every day. I just couldn't. This was like learning Ukrainian, learning Cyrillic alphabet. It was just so opposite of anything I knew. Learn all the facts about alcoholism. That was okay. That's pretty cerebral. I was okay on that. Attend Al-Anon meetings often and pray. Well, let me see. I guess that was 14 months. What I was doing is I was doing 7 AA meetings a week, and 7 Al-Anon meetings a week. I was going to 14 meetings a week because I was that desperate. Something had to start working because it wasn't working. It just wasn't working for me. Okay, the don'ts. Don't be self-righteous. Well, I had, regularly you say, well, I'm not drinking. Why can't you stop? But I had a better one. I used to drink, and I don't anymore. Why don't you be more like me? Oh, boy. Yeah, you want to get in an argument on that one with them. Don't try to dominate, nag, or scold. And I did all those. And complain, in England they call it whinging, a whiner. Everything was she. Don't lose your temper. I couldn't stop that. I could not stop losing my temper. Don't try and push anyone but yourself. Don't keep bringing up the past. Oh, man, that's the best one right there. You just beat them up. You know, remember back on the cruise in 1975, when you ripped my shirt off my back? Yeah. You haven't changed. Woo. Okay. Don't keep checking up on your alcoholic. Now, this one, I don't know if I've ever said what I'm going to say about this one. I think I have enough self-esteem now where I don't feel so much shame. But, alcoholism really messes up judgment and everything. And Jackie went to her mother's house. We had a fight, and then she went with Brad Gilbert, a friend of the family, and stayed the night with him, it seemed like. So now, I'm an ex-Army Ranger. I've only been out of the Rangers 3 years. So this is what checking up from an Army Ranger is. And my son, who's little, 6 or 7, was home with me in the summer. He was home alone when I left, went to the parents' house, but I was camoed up in camouflage gear with a bayonet that I took from Vietnam. And I sat in those bushes watching, just like I did it as a sniper in Vietnam, just watching, letting bugs bite me. Here's the embarrassing thing. Snipers, y'all don't know this, but you have to stay in one spot for many, many hours. And one guy, Hancock, he didn't go more than 1,000 meters in 3 days. Well, we wear Depends, and so you don't move. So I was wearing Depends. Now, if that isn't outrageous, if that isn't a don't, I don't know what isn't. Don't wear Depends when you're on your stalking. Well, thank God. Oh, and I was sober. Yeah, a real representative of AA right there. You mean after 14, 15 months, that's the best you can do? That was it. That was the best I had. So thank God they didn't. I was at her parents' house in the bushes, and they didn't come home. And it got to be about 6 o'clock in the morning, and I said, you know what? I started getting some sense. That's the first thing I thought of was my son. I don't want him to wake up. So I stealthily went back to my car. And it looked like a bush was driving my car. I had all this tree limbs, branches, sweating like a farm animal. Because Houston in July is juicy. Yeah. So anyway, I get home and my son wakes up and sees me. He said, "What are you doing?" And I said, "Never mind." So we're only as sick as our secrets. You know, he just felt not safe with somebody coming in looking like a bush. So I eviscerated don't check up on the alcoholic. Don't wallow in self-pity. I took that one to the limit. Poor me. Poor me. Eventually, if you're an alcoholic, poor me ends up pour me a drink. And everything was about her. Nothing was about me. Nobody until now ever knew about my Bush episode. And don't make threats you don't intend to carry out. Oh, man, I would do, if you ever do that again, I'm going to just, fill in the blank. And I never followed through. So that's how I started in Al-Anon. Not the sharpest pencil in the box. Really very sick, really a sick individual. And so Al-Anon also had something that was very helpful. One day at a time, the little card. I don't know if y'all remember that or see that, if they have it. And I had about 5 or 6 of those around the house, and I still have it, that original one in my big book. It was a great bookmark. And it really helped me try and focus in on being in the moment. But there's one on there, I won't go through them all, but there's one that, London, the London groups love this. I mean, they have whole meetings just for today. And they read it every meeting. I mean, it's just amazing that they took that. But there's one in here that says, I will do at least two things I don't want to do just for exercise. I will not show anyone that my feelings are hurt. They may be hurt, but today I will not show it. Now, that is just for Al-Anons, because I was so dramatic and so extreme. You know, look what you're doing to me. just wailing. In AA, it's the opposite. We hide our feelings. You're not going to get much out of us. but the Al-Anon and me just was, it was outrageous. So those were the tools, the beginning tools in Al-Anon when I started. And the goal, the thing that I strove for is a concept in Al-Anon called detach with love. Now, I could detach or I could love, but it was impossible to do both. And that's the one that I failed on the most. So Al-Anon back then had now it's called Courage to Change. It's a daily meditation book. Well, back then it was called Al-Anon One Day at a Time. It was a little blue book. And this set me on the path. This gave me my goal. I'm going to read July the 1st in the little blue book, One Day at a Time. Because if I can do this, I'm truly got this Al-Anon mastered. This I learned in Al-Anon, says a member at a meeting. The person I married cannot be the source of my happiness or sorrow. The gift of life is personally mine, as their life belongs to them, to enjoy or destroy as each of us wishes. I see them angry, must I be? They are hostile, must I be? Am I being faithless to my marriage vows when I achieve a bit of self-confidence while they continue to suffer the pains of self-doubt? I'm not their guide, master, or keeper. We are individuals and must find our lonely way to our goals. My source of comfort and strength they refuse to share with me. I have learned through bitter experience it's fruitless to offer them. Adjusting myself to things as they are and being able to love without trying to interfere with or control anyone else, however close to me, this is what I search for in Al-Anon and can find in Al-Anon. The learning is sometimes painful. The reward is life itself, rich, full, and serene. That's Al-Anon. That's it. And that's who I am today, pretty close. So what I want to do is give you my journey, how I got to this place of being real comfortable in my own skin, really comfortable. So, step one, unmanageability. And I had to put this down because this is to me my unmanageability. I threatened, scolded, manipulated, coerced, pleaded, begged, and bribed. Generally tried all I could to make the situation better. And guess what happened? The situation got worse. That's step one and a half. I mean, that's the unmanageable for me. But that didn't make a difference. That my life didn't change. I didn't get any relief. And I don't know how long it took for me to get to the powerlessness. And the Al-Anon step is powerless over the alcoholic. And that didn't make a difference for me. But what did, what shifted the dynamics was when I finally got, you know what? I'm powerless over her disease. That's what I'm powerless over. And when I got that one, that I'm in the right direction. And it just, it's like, wow, I'm powerless over another person's disease. And I got that because I was powerless over my own, and it just segued, well, I'm powerless over theirs too. That was a massive, massive shift. And I started getting relief, blessed relief, when it all of a sudden I'm thinking, well, because I was fighting her. It was her I was fighting. It was until I shifted in, well, I can't fight a disease. And so I started, I quit fighting the disease and I quit fighting her. I took it off of her. Now, for me, I was exceptionally reactive. This is just childhood stuff. But if you ever see anybody play baseball and somebody throws the ball, it's supposed to go over the plate. Okay, if I'm the batter, if they threw the ball up here, I swung at it. If it rolled on the floor, I swung at it. And I swung hard, like going to the house, out of my shoes. If it was outside over here, I left the batter's box and go hit it. That's how I was reacting. And my sponsor says, you think you can take a pitch? Can you let something go by? Can you let go? I went, huh? I had no skill set on reacting. I just had none. So when I stopped reacting, it was because I was taught by my sponsor, I don't have to react. And we came up with contingency plans. Well, if this happens, what are some things you can do, some contingency plans? Well, when she got drunk, she got mean. Now, she was a little bitty. She wasn't big. She wanted to fight. I thought, oh, my God. She liked to throw things. Can you imagine? And you know what? Whatever she threw, I was trying to hit it. And I was verbally trying to hit it. You know, I was screaming at her, raging, holy. But the hitting stuff was dicey because just a natural reaction is to push somebody away. And if they're coming at you real hard, you've got to push back harder. And it could cause a lot of problems. So my sponsor said, I want you to pack an overnight bag and keep it in your car. I went, really? And I was told, when that starts, don't say anything. Just get your keys and walk in your car and go to the hotel you've chosen. And I did that. And you know what I felt? Empowered. Because I, for the first time, I wasn't taking care of her. I was taking care of me. And that's the whole shift in Al-Anon, is to take the focus off of the addiction and learn how to have self-care skills. And that's taught. I didn't know how to do it. So, let me see, I'd been in Al-Anon. Oh, I took my mom to Al-Anon because my father's an alcoholic, and he found a hoochie mama, what I call her. And, you know, promised to do everything with him and treat him special. And the narcissism in him just fell for it, hook, line, and sinker. And let him drink. So he divorced mom at 35 years of marriage, 5 kids. And mom lost it. She was breaking down. So I took her to Al-Anon at my home group. She liked all the ladies. But there's nothing wrong with religion, but she was a religious addict. It was, I mean, she'd be there at 3 a.m. praying, taking her turn doing this. And she had to go to work at 6 a.m. All that stuff. So she thought she was going to get better by doing all that. And she was going through red lights and not realizing it because she was so focused on the alcoholic dad. She could not disconnect from that. And she was so full of shame and what did I do wrong and all that blah, blah, blah. And then she didn't watch where she was going. She's falling down. And then August the 6th, 1984, her office was across the street on Memorial Drive. There's a cross street to then go across Memorial. She got her hair done. She was going back to work at lunch. It was raining. And she had a paper to cover her hair. And a car turned left real quickly and hit her. Flipped her up, and she landed on the hood, bounced, and landed in the street on her head. The office saw it and called me immediately. I didn't work too far from there. I defied any policeman to stop me. I was on a mission, and I got there before the ambulance did. And so I'm holding mom in my lap. She's bleeding out. Blood, air, I'm just soaked in her blood. She has one eye open and one closed. Can't talk. But one side was paralyzed. And I just kept saying, Mom, hang on. Can you hear me? She would squeeze my hand. But that eye didn't blink. It just looked. And you know what I did? I started saying the Serenity Prayer over and over. God grant us the serenity. And I could see her part of her mouth. She was saying it too. And the ambulance finally came, and she's looking straight at me. And I don't know why. I meant to say the ambulance is coming. But I said, Mom, everything's going to be okay. The angels are coming. And when I said that, she got a sideways smile and closed her eyes. And she died in my arms. And you know what I thought of? I am so grateful I'm in the program. I am grateful that the last thing she saw was her son in 12-step program of AA and Al-Anon. And that she knew I was going to be okay. So I told her, I said, Mom, you did your job. Well, the complete recovery community showed up. They didn't let me be alone for a second. I stayed at my sponsor's house. They carried me. They absolutely carried me. And that's the first time I felt love. I mean, people I didn't even know everybody was doing everything. And that's when I said, you know what? No matter what, I'm going to make it because I'm not alone. Now, my wife at the time had sobered up and she was acting okay. And what we found was sober, we really didn't like each other. We really didn't. We're like, well, who are you? Who are you? And we just said, you know what? This is not. So we went our separate ways. But we went our separate ways in sobriety and healed up from that. And now I'm still, like I said, she just texts me, hey, what's going on? Where you at? Blah, blah, blah. She tells me what's going on with her. And she's been sober many, many years. So I was okay. I was okay. But you know what? I was bouncing around in Al-Anon without a sponsor. And I went to, I don't know which meeting it was. It wasn't my home group. It was Church of the Holy Spirit. So anyway, I heard Betty Dreis talk, Betty D. Her sponsor, LCC, because they were out of California. But Betty and Ed had moved to Houston. And I said, that's my sponsor. Now, here's the problem. Betty is sponsoring 25 women. She was a giant in the program in Houston and in California before she left. So I asked her, and she said, let me think about it. So she talked to her husband, Ed, who was in the AA for years himself, and she said, well, we come up with this idea. And she didn't say no. She didn't say yes. She says, what do you think? That I don't sponsor men. And on, I don't know, Wednesday night, each week, these 25 women come to my house, and we have a sponsor evening. And you're not going to come. I don't want a man in with that group. She said, we got some very damaged women who, for whatever reason, would like you. I said, well, what's wrong with that? She pegged me. So she said, this is what Ed and I came up with, that we'll talk once a week with you, but it's going to be Ed and I. We're going to be at the 59 Diner, and Ed will sit next to me. And Ed was just the sweetest man, God. And he didn't talk much, so it was like he wasn't there. And then we would go over stuff. So, became my sponsor. And here's how the program works. Betty was in the program not for Ed, her husband, but for her son, a doctor who committed suicide. He hung himself. He was on pain pills and alcohol. I had recently lost my mother. So her wound of her son healed through me, and my mother wound healed through her. And we really, really got close. She became like a mom. And she didn't say it, but Ed told me, he says, you're like a son to her. And that is something I didn't expect to happen. I didn't expect the thing to heal like this. So I just feel exceptionally blessed that I had Ed and Betty Dries for many years until Ed died, and then Betty had a heart attack and died. Her heart was bad. So you're going to get mainly what she taught me. So there's a book. I have it right here. It's called, can y'all see this? It's the 12 Steps and 12 Traditions. This is the Al-Anon book. And there's something in here on step three that absolutely changed my life on step three. And it goes like this. It says, this relationship I have with a higher power does not mean merely asking for help, but knowing it's there and accepting it. And the example they give is it's if I was on a shore of a river, and across the river, my children were there, starving, cold, freezing, and on the other side. And on my side is a boat with blankets, food, and a way to get across there. And what I've been doing is asking my higher power to help me without using the tools that I have. What are the tools? What are the blankets and the food and the vehicle to get me to the other side? The steps. So when I was praying, oh, make her better, wrong direction. And so my prayer became very simple. I don't know, and I need help. And that's how I got into step four and five. And, you know, I can't tell you how many meetings I've been to in 42 years in both programs. Thousands. But this one meeting on the fourth and fifth step, because I was in the middle of doing it, and Betty kept asking me, what's your part? I don't got a part. No part. And let me tell you why. Because when I had about 6 years, the bottom fell out for me, emotionally and mentally. I didn't know what was wrong. In AA, they call it restless, irritable, discontented. In Al-Anon, it's itchy, twitchy, and bitchy. And I was both. I had them both going. And I didn't know why. I was just like a run-over dog biting everybody trying to help me. And I said, I'm doing everything right. Why is this so miserable? And Betty said, you know what? I've been talking to some people, and I think you need outside help. You got more going on here than... And so I ran that by my AA sponsor. He says, yep, you got more. She's right. I mean, he knew of Betty, but he didn't know. He never met her. So they both agreed. And my AA sponsor said, well, I got a guy here, knows all about this. And I said, I don't want to go see whoever you got there. He says, he's my best friend. Please come by. So I said, okay, for you, I will. His name was John. He sat there and listened to him. I didn't know who he was. 5 minutes, and he said, stop. I'll tell you what you got, and you're going to need some serious therapy. You are suffering from severe PTSD. And I'm not talking just kind of a little, a little bit. I'm talking 24/7 for a year. Because at night in Vietnam, we would, with the Rangers, everything happened at night. We'd start our patrols. We would go. We would jump in. We would swim in. And each night, I didn't know if I was going to live. Every night, it was trauma. So that was blocking me. Okay, I go to trauma therapy. In trauma therapy, they find out there's more trauma. That I was severely abused as a child by my father. I mean, hospitalized for beatings. Ulcers at 10. Stuttering at 10. Horrible. So, I did that. And I really believe that kind of therapy, you uncover and you discover. But if you want to recover, I had to do it through the steps. And that's where I got blessed relief. And so this meeting was on the fourth and fifth step. I can remember the woman's name. This is an Al-Anon meeting, Jan. She had on a red suit, a white shirt. And she was talking about my part in child abuse with her sponsor. And I thought, well, how do you have a part? And that's what she said. How do I have a part in child abuse? And I couldn't figure it out. Jan couldn't figure it out. And finally, her sponsor sold her. Of course you don't when you're 10 years old. Not then. But how do you recreate the trauma in your life today? How do you pick toxic relationships, toxic jobs, toxicity running through your life? That's your part. I went, uh-oh. Because all my relationships were toxic, crazy. I had a crazy boss. It was a toxic work environment. And I said, that's got to change. That's got to change. And so when that happened, things started changing because what we found was a 10-year-old was running the adult. That's what was happening. And so in step six, and I love an Al-Anon in this book on step six. I'll use the exact words that they use because it's important. And it talks about it's not defects, it's defenses. And that made all the difference in the world. I was just trying to be defended as a 10-year-old. I was given adult problems with a child's mind, and that's how I went through life. It's called maladaptive behavior patterns, and why my life didn't work. It just didn't work. So, how did I, as a child, put on masks, put on my armor, and have weapons as my defenses? So, my defenses and my mask was compartmentalization. Nobody knew who I was. I was something different to in each situation as a chameleon. It's hard to get to know somebody like that. My armor was to me. It's happening to me. And I used to think, all these victims and martyrs in Al-Anon, that's not me. Well, if my attitude is to me, that's a victim. It's happening to me. And then my weapons was I had a vitriolic mouth. I could just tear the skin off of somebody verbally. So, what's the solution? I can't do anything about that. It's a character defense. I've got to give it to my higher power. Just because I know about it doesn't mean I have to do something about it. And so what happens is I turn it over to my higher power, because it's hardwired in my brain. I go into any of those survival situations, and the only thing I have is I don't know how to relate to a healthy person. Clueless. So, if I can't do it, my higher power has to do it. And that's where step 7 comes in. The word humility in step 7, it means teachability. So I had to go from survival skills to life skills. I did not know how to live. I had to be taught how to live. One of the saddest things for me was I was going through this, and if I was cash register honest. If I was, my loving was contractual. I love you if, or if you do this, then I'll do this. That's all I knew. And so one day I told Betty, I said, you know, I hate to say this, but I don't know how to love. It is not in there. I never saw it. I was never treated that way. And I said, I don't know what to do. So she said, you know what? Got an idea. And she was always so soft-spoken. I go, oh, okay. She said, why don't you practice random acts of kindness? And I thought, what in God's name is that? This was a long time ago. And so she left me with that. I came back. I said, I don't know how to do it. I didn't know how to do that. I didn't know what it means. So back then, it wasn't the internet. You had to order a book and had to go to the bookstore. And she ordered a book called Random Acts of Kindness. I think it was Chicken of the Soul. All these examples. And so I started seeing examples. And I go, oh. But I said, why would you do that and not want to tell anybody? I want everybody to know how good I am. I don't want to be quiet. This is a big deal. And so she said, I tell you what, I want you to do something, pick something daily, a random act of kindness, and call me, but don't tell me what you did. Oh, God. Just tell me you did it. So I said, no. So I went to my AA sponsor. I said, can you believe she's having me do this? You know how children play parents? And George says, that is a great idea. I went, golly. So I started out picking up a piece of paper near a dumpster in the parking lot. And I put it in there, and I thought I'd won the Academy Award. I said, I'm the man. But nobody knows. It's killing me. It is killing me. So back then, they used to throw papers on the porches, and sometimes it'd go in the yard, so I'd pick it up and throw it in the porch. And then on the toll road, you know, remember when you, before they had the sticker thing, I would pay for the person behind me. And I got to tell you this one story. In the rearview mirror, I didn't know who it was. And I paid for the person behind me. And then I left, but I didn't leave very fast. And this person came after me. I mean, aggressive, professional. and pulled in front of my car, wouldn't let me go. And a woman got out of the back seat. I said, God almighty. And she said, why did you do that? I said, well, I'm supposed to be practicing random acts of kindness. And that. She said, really? I said, yeah. And she says, you know what? Can you see the car I have? And I didn't even, it was a Mercedes Maybach. You know what a Maybach is? That's about a $400,000 Mercedes. And the guy driving it was her driver. And you know what she told me? She said, the reason I stopped you is she said, when you're wealthy, nobody does anything for you. This is the nicest thing that's happened to me. It's killing me not to tell Betty. I said, I got something I gotta tell you. She goes, no, no. okay. And then I said, how long I gotta do this? And she says, until it's enough. So, we're going along, I'm doing it every day, and then one day I get my car serviced, I got a Toyota, going to the Toyota dealership, and I go in, and this is in Houston, and there's a little Spanish lady, what we call an abuelita, little grandmother, little small mamacita, and she looked so sad. So I asked the mechanic, because he was working on my car, and I was curious, what's going on in there? And I said, what's wrong with her car? He said, oh, her brakes are all gone. I said, ow, that's expensive. He said, yeah. And I don't know why I did this, but I just said, you know what? Here's my card. Put it on my card, but please don't tell her. Don't tell anybody. He looked at me. He said, you sure? I said, yeah, yeah. So he went in, paid it with my card, came back out. And then I went back in. Her car came out before mine did. She goes to the cashier, and she starts bawling, just crying her eyes out. I went, oh, no. So she left, got in her car. My car comes up, and I asked the cashier, I said, why was that poor lady crying? She said that she was getting ready to write a hot check. She had no money. She needed the money to pay for her grandchildren's food. Well, you know that lump that starts getting up in there? Here it came. And I said, oh, no, not the Toyota dealership. No. Uh-oh, I was doing everything. I was buying anything not to lose it in the Toyota dealership. So I go to pay my bill, and it's not right. I said, well, you're missing about half of it. And she says, yeah, the mechanics heard what you did. And what they decided, just pay parts, not labor. Well, that did it. I knew it was coming. Here it came. I just said, if I could just get in the car. And I didn't make it out of the parking lot. I pulled... And I had the cry of a lifetime. And I happen to have a beach towel in the back seat, and I think I filled that sucker up. Because for the first time I felt love. I said, so this is what it feels like. Oh my gosh. So, second time it happened. Was I have a sponsee who's in both programs. He's in AA and Al-Anon because he has a father that was he was going to go back out. So he said, you know, you're in Al-Anon too, and I want to work the Al-Anon steps, and I want to go through this, and I want to go to meetings with you. So I said, okay. Stephen has 5 children. He's a lawyer. And Yeah. So one day his wife invites me over for hot dogs. Just, she never met me. And Steve and I were spending a lot of time. And she homeschooled those five kids. Busy woman. And I go into the house, and one of the little six-year-old, they don't have any modulation to their voice. It's just loud. But she thought she was whispering in her mother's ear. And she said, "Who is that man?" Well, it caught the mother off guard, and she didn't know, you know, how do you explain an AA sponsor and all that? So just off the top of her head, she said, "That's the man who saved your father's life." And the little girl, her head went. And she ran and just started hugging me. Well, Stephen saw it. And he got to see what his alcoholism, what his absence was doing to the family. He started crying. Well, then his wife started crying. Every kid there, we had five kids crying, and I started losing it. We had everybody crying, kind of like a big huddle hug, but it was a love hug, because that little girl, was, her love was pure. So that's how I learned to love. Addiction is a separator. The 12-step programs in Al-Anon is a connector. And that's as simple as I can make the program. It's about connection. It's about connecting to myself, connecting to my higher power, connecting to the program. And there isn't any amount of money that can buy that connection. It just can't be bought. If it could, all these rich people would be going around feeling pretty good about themselves instead of doing the craziness that they're all doing. So, I asked Betty, "I don't understand forgiveness. I can't forgive my father. I cannot." And she said this. She said, "Forgiveness is about resentment, and you have a resentment against your father. And a resentment is like a poison fruit. And it's, your fruit is next to this poison fruit, poisoning it, killing it. And what's got it connected are these vines. So you've got these vines connecting this poisonous fruit. And by doing steps 4 and 5, that cuts one vine. Doing steps 6 and 7, that cuts another vine. And steps 8 and 9 snap the last vine. And when that vine pulls away from that poisonous fruit, you are as you were before. Forgiveness means give as before the resentment." And I went, "Holy cow, let me work the program." I want that. I want to be as I was before all the abuse, before everything, because I was a pretty sweet child. So, and she said, and then steps 10 and 11 are about keeping the vines cut. Don't let them grow back, because they will. And I thought, well, that's just simple. That's so simple. Today, I mentioned, in our when you're asking us questions, and somebody asked the question, "Aha! Have you had any aha? Have you had that spiritual experience?" And for 39 years, I hadn't. I had the spiritual awakening, lots of those, of the educational variety. But when the pandemic started and I was home, I started going to Zoom meetings all over the world, and I started going to meditation meetings. And when I went to those meditation meetings, something changed. Now, Bill Wilson had a spiritual experience and nobody could relate to it. They couldn't identify with it. Honestly, if people who have these experiences and they identify with them, it's almost like a cult because it's so personal and it's just for this person. It's not for everybody. So all I can say is step 11 allowed me a deeper connection to my higher power. And so I came up with one, and I just have a cold. I'm not crying. So I came up with one, and I don't want to be specific, but I had a spiritual experience. So I said, well, you know what? I'm going to try it again. But guess where I tried it? During a root canal. I'll see how good this sucker is. Let's just try this. And you know what? It worked. He was on his knee on the arm drilling, you know, and all that stuff flying up in your face. And I felt as calm and as peaceful. I said, oh. And I checked my, I got all these things that checked my pulse, and my pulse was running like a 58. In the middle of a horrible, I don't know, I'm not much for root canals. And I said, this is amazing. Out of that experience, I go back to beginning. Do develop new interests and new activities. Do have fun. That's the biggest difference I noticed in Al-Anon and AA. In AA, it sounds like a bar. You know, we're just crazy, goofy people. And in Al-Anon, it was a tomb. So serious, and nobody having fun, and everybody controlling, and oh my God. And so, but it was, I didn't learn how to have fun in AA. I learned how to have fun in Al-Anon. That's where I learned fun. And it's different for different people. The women were talking about, one woman, fun for her was a pedicure. I said, why do you want to do that? Another one was curtains. But it didn't matter. It's not the what. It's what floats my boat. So because I didn't know, I knew what color you liked. I knew what you liked. I had no clue what I liked. I had given away my soul in the delusion that I can control and I can make you like me. And because I needed you to like me because I needed stuff. That's that contractual. So I left all that behind and I said, you know what? I just retired from my job. I've had this idea for 10 years. I'm going to go through with it. So I put everything in storage, gave away stuff, sold my car, and I've been living out of two suitcases for almost 2 years. Because the first place I went was Kiev, Ukraine. Because I have a lot of friends there. I know people there. I don't speak Ukrainian very well, but I can read it pretty good. I love to go down the street, and I love the people there. I'm so happy I know them before the war. They're the nicest people. They remind me of Texas, the way it used to be. Just very sweet. They're really good with their children. I'll see men with the little babies walking them. Women at night can walk through the parks at 10 p.m., no problem, safe. It was just a beautiful, beautiful country for me. So what I did is I wrote my first draft of a novel in Kiev. And no TV, language, you know, I'm not chatting with a lot of people. And all I do is write and walk. And I was in heaven. It was like I just, a doorway, a portal opened, and I've never felt so close to my higher power. It was like falling in love with God, I guess. Well, I got a call in January last year. You need to get out. I said, who's this? this is the American embassy. I said, well, listen, all my friends are saying, that's just Russians. They're just, that's what they do. And they said, no, not this time. I said, well, what information do you have? Like I'm somebody big. And they say, well, does the CIA and NSA help? I'm like, uh-oh. I'm out of my pay grade with this group. So I left. I went to Paris, finished the second draft, and then I went to Buenos Aires to get it published. Fun. It doesn't matter what it is. But the key is to find what one's passion is. I love to travel. That's why I'm here. I love to meet new people. And so I want to go back to my little boy, my son. I raised my son by myself. When I got him, he was 10. He was suicidal. He was checking out books in the library for suicide. And I raised that boy by myself, and this is how our morning started around the Cheerios. I did a suicide assessment on a scale of 1 to 10. Where are you on suiciding? Some days it was a 1. Some days, I don't want to go on, Dad. I'm done. Betty. Betty said, get that boy an Alateen. So guess what? A meeting I go to next door was an Alateen meeting. He starts going to that, starts getting friends, but he's starting to use. He's huffing glue. He's huffing anything that'll get down. I thought he was making airplanes. He's... Then he started drinking. Then he just was off to the races as a young teenager. And I finally said, "Look, at 15, I said I'll take this as long as I can take it." And then, because this is a sober house, and then one day I can't take it, and I'm gonna change the locks, deed over the car to you, and good luck. He looked at me. So guess what? He goes to Alateen that night and says, my father's listen to what he's doing. Well, guess what? The woman running the Alateens knew exactly what was going on, and she quietly set up an intervention. And all the friends started intervening on him. And when he came back from that meeting, he said, Dad, I want to go to treat. So the next year we go to Crested Butte Mountain Conference. I'm speaking up there, and they have a big Alateen thing. One of the things is they bring the parents in. The children say what they want to say. And so my son says, Dad, I really love you. Now, this was before I did all this work. I was still stuck in the gooey. And I kind of looked at him like, what the hell? I didn't connect. Because all I knew was the conditional, the contractual love. This Christmas, in San Francisco, with my 8-year sober son, we were sitting in Union Square on some steps. It was raining, and my granddaughter, they were in Victoria's Secret. Oh, God. Looking for a robe, and they had to try on every. So we're out there for like an hour in the rain. And you know what? In that rain, my son became a better man than me. He has such hope, such grace, such a kind, gentle giant. He's 6'6". And we talked, not only Father, Son, but AA, Al-Anon. We talked all the Alateen. We talked all of it. And we were, it was like I was talking to a sponsee or a sponsor. It was, the connection was incredible. And then he looked over at me and he says, "Dad, I love you." And I said, "Son, I am so proud of you. I love you too, because I know what that feels like." And so that's what I want to say tonight, is I love all of y'all because I know what it feels like. Thank you.
My name is Nancy.